Well, let's open our Bibles to Proverbs chapter 11. 11:16. Our next section of study in this passage is dealing with the woman of character, the woman of integrity. Now, the first part of this chapter dealt with integrity, if you remember. Now we're dealing with the woman of integrity, but more specifically, only one line that deals with that. However, the book of Proverbs has a great deal to inform us, a great deal to teach us about the woman of character, what we should be looking for, what we should expect, and what we should do if we happen to have a woman without character. At any rate, that's where to begin with. So 11:16, if you're ready, I'm ready. It says, a gracious woman attains honor. Well, first of all, it's not a gracious woman, but it is a woman of C-H-long-A-N, Cain. And Cain refers to beauty, either inner or outer, with emphasis on the inner. In other words, sometimes the word C-H-A-N has an overt idea associated with it, but most of the time it is an inner emphasis. Thus, the idea of grace, integrity. Many times the word is translated grace. Most of the time, however, it's simply translated favor. Here it's translated a gracious woman to communicate the idea of integrity, the idea of character. Thus, I like the phrase grace, integrity. It says that she attains honor. The honor that she attains is recognition, respect, rapport even, with fellow human beings, other women, other men. Actually, what this word communicates is true femininity. True femininity is something that is not very well known today. People think that you're a woman, I mean, that if you're a woman, you're feminine. That's not the case. Femininity is an inner virtue, not an outer virtue. There is no merit, if you please. There is no effort in being a woman. You're born that way. We understand that there is no effort in being a man. You're born that way. But being a man of character is entirely different. To have a man, to be a man of integrity, to have character stability, this is entirely different. So we're talking about the woman of integrity. The woman of grace would be one way to put it. But the word grace communicates integrity, true humility in a woman, and thus the term true femininity. Women in rebellion, women in revolt against God's design for them, are women who are frustrated, who are insecure, who are bitter, and as a result are very angry. Angry with society, angry with men, angry with other women, and ultimately angry with God. True femininity is an expression of humility that recognizes God's plan for you, God's role for you, God's place for you in society, God's place for you in a proper authority structure with the right man, God's plan for you as a, pardon the expression, child bearer. Women today tend to rebel against that. But that's only in the media. That's only what is, you know, really publicized, because the majority of women out there are still feminine. That is, to a certain extent. The feminist movement does not have the majority support that a lot of people think it does. It just has the attention It just gets our attention because it's in the media. However, there are two types of femininity that need to be cultivated. There is the basic creature humility, which recognizes the woman's place in society, and then there's the deeper humility that forms integrity. Most women today have the creature humility that recognizes and accepts their place as quote-unquote child-bearer, housewife. But there are very few women who have the integrity to go along with that whole perspective. She is the one who really attains honor, true recognition, true respect among all the people within society. All right, under this point number one, we move into Proverbs 11:22. As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. Well, the beautiful woman here refers to physical beauty. The word is yapah, Y-A-P-H-A-H. It does refer to outer beauty, physical beauty, so we're talking about a knockout. We all have our standards. We all have our idea of a beautiful woman. And I guess you usually use the movie stars as, you know, your guideline. Someone thinks Bo Derek is some bodacious woman. Others think Farrah Fawcett is far out. And you can go on and on. However, whatever your standards are, beauty is nothing unless there's something on the inside, something in the soul. It says here, a woman who lacks discretion. The word discretion is T-A-A-M, ta-m. And this is a capacity to evaluate and make wise decisions. Translated discretion, that's good. What is discretion? It's a capacity to evaluate things according to wisdom and make wise decisions. Maybe I should write that. Evaluate. All right, capacity to evaluate. Capacity to evaluate and make wise decisions. See, this is more important. When we get to Proverbs 31, we will see that what really determines a woman of character is a woman who has the capacity to make wise decisions, to think on her own. See, true femininity, or man's idea of a woman is not to have a slave, that is, a man of integrity, is not to have a slave, is not to have a helpless, pretty little thing to hang on his elbow when he goes out. But a man of integrity wants a woman of integrity, wants a woman of capacity, wants a woman who has the capacity to evaluate situations on her own and make wise decisions. If a man has to run the show, now sure, the man is the initiator, the man is the one in authority, but if the man has to control every single nickel and dime, if he has to control every single little decision that has to be made, this can really play upon him. He needs to be able to sit back and almost put things out of his mind, knowing that the wife can handle it, that the wife can make the proper decisions. Hopefully we'll have time to get to some of those factors. Now, to make an analogy, the writer of Proverbs says it has a ring of gold in a swine's snout. Now, there is a custom to put rings in pigs' noses. I'm sure this is not decorative. I think it has a lot to do with control. At any rate, to put a ring in a swine's snout for control purposes is a functional thing, not really for beauty. Therefore, to put a gold ring is a waste of the gold. And if you do put a gold ring in a pig's nose, that's what you have when you have a beautiful woman who has no integrity. It's a waste. A waste of the beauty. Now there's a beautiful woman. A waste of that beauty is when there's beauty and no integrity to go along with it. No character. And I'm not talking so much about intelligence. Let's not put IQ there on a level and think that that's what we're talking about. No, we're talking about character. We're talking about integrity. This is what's really involved here. Point two. Proverbs 12, verse 4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband. Okay. The excellent wife. Actually, it's the excellent woman, or more specifically, it is a woman of, this is the way the Hebrew usually constructs it, and then the English likes to turn it around for some reason, a woman of C-H-A-Y-I-L. Kayil. We've seen it before. It is the word for integrity. A woman of strength, a woman of ability, a woman of efficiency. This is the woman of Kayil. Strength, ability, efficiency, character. And actually, it is the character that comes first. The character then produces the strength, the ability, the efficiency. That's because we're talking about not necessarily the physical strength, but the strength of character, the ability that comes from integrity, and the efficiency that comes from integrity. So it is a woman of integrity. Integrity is the crown of her husband, and that indicates that he receives honor. It's like putting on a crown, and everyone looks and says, there's the king. A man who has a wife of integrity is like a king. He has all the honor and the respect that he needs. He has all the promotion that he needs. And it really doesn't matter what everyone else thinks, because it is the woman that gives him honor. However, because the woman is a woman of character, and she receives recognition based on our passage in chapter 11, the woman of Cain, the woman of graciousness, attains honor. Because she attains honor for herself because of her association and proper respect for her husband, he also receives honor and respect within society. That will be amplified later in Proverbs 31 also. You put Proverbs 31. Point three. Proverbs 14:1. The wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. So actually, we want the first part of the verse, 14:1a. The wise woman. Now, the wise woman is a woman. The Hebrew word is C-H-A-K-A-M, chacham, and it refers to moral and spiritual standards in the soul. The emphasis is on the application of content. Now, it's not content being emphasized so much, for wisdom emphasizes the ability to express knowledge. Knowledge is there in the soul. Wisdom is the application of knowledge. And this is a woman who is called here wise. It is an adjective, so it's translated correctly this time, the wise woman. Now, builds her house. Builds her house is an idiom for proper management procedures, proper management activities. She handles her household properly, and once again, illustrated at Proverbs 31. We'll get to it. I'm sure we'll be able to tonight, unless I get bogged down on something. She builds her house. She promotes stability in her family. She makes the wise decisions that we've already seen. She handles business opportunities expediently, She recognizes a good deal and jumps on it. She seeks bargains and she gets the bargains out there in the marketplace. This is all called building her house. Point four, Proverbs 31:10. We've looked at several standards, several words that communicate a woman of integrity. The word Cain for grace, integrity, or graciousness. The word Ta'am for discretion. The word Kayil for integrity. The word Chacham for wisdom. And now in 31:10, it's all summed up by the same word we've already seen, Kayil. It says an excellent wife, translated back in 12:4, in the same way, an excellent wife. It's a crown of her husband. But here, an excellent wife who can find. By the way, it still is a wife of Kayil, a wife of integrity, a wife of character. And those factors that we looked at in 12:4 apply here. Strength, ability, efficiency, based on character. And it says then, a wife of integrity, who can find? What's the idea? They are very rare, a rare breed, if you please. You're just not going to find a woman of integrity very easily. Her value is far above pearls, is what it literally says. However, pearls are representative of jewels in general. So you have the value of a wife of integrity, and really the word wife is woman. See, there is no word for wife in the Hebrew. It's one word, woman. It's always woman. So it's an excellent woman or a woman of integrity in Proverbs 31:10. The question, who can find, communicates to us the rarity of such a find. Therefore, we should be very diligent and careful in our evaluation of women. We should be aware that beauty is not always to be desired. Beauty is an initial attraction, of course, but the key to any woman is what goes on in the soul. Now, since we've looked at all these factors with regard to the woman, you've got four words then, right? Four factors. You've got graciousness, you've got discretion, you've got integrity, and you've got wisdom. Now, what about the negative? Let's look at that in point five. How about the woman in emotional revolt? Now, what is emotional revolt? There are only two things that will control your soul: your mentality or your emotions. If your mentality controls you, then that will pave the way for stability of soul, which then paves the way for integrity. But if you do not cultivate integrity in your soul, then your emotions will control you. The weak point in the woman's character is her emotions. Now, men have emotional problems as well, but they have a bigger weakness, a stronger weakness, how's that? They have a bigger weakness than the emotions. However, the women have the primary problem with their emotions. Why? Because they are, by divine design, responders. And they coincide so perfectly with the design in the soul, which is the emotions are responders to the heart. The heart is the intellect. The heart is the controller of the human unit, body, soul, and spirit. And the emotions are responders. Well, in the relationship between the man and the woman, the man is the controller of the one flesh unit, man and woman, and the woman is the responder. and she has an emotional dependence and an emotional attraction to the man that is different from what the man has toward the woman. Well, because she has by design an emotional need, an emotional dependence upon the man, she also is more vulnerable to emotional temptations, emotional pressure. And thus, it is very common to see women in emotional revolt. Women who have rejected the pathway of integrity, the pathway of character, and instead are operating on their emotions. Now, you can operate on your emotions in two ways. Both are really rebellion against God's design. But you can be an emotional monster in the sense of an aggressor, or you can be an emotional cripple in the sense of wearing your emotions on your sleeves. You've heard that term before. Every little thing that goes wrong, you're in tears. Every time the mail is late, you're in tears. Every time you know anything goes wrong, the slightest thing, the toilet backs up, you're in tears. Women wear their emotions in emotional revolt. They wear their emotions on their sleeves so that they become emotional cripples and in essence are useless unless they have one or more other people to manage them. Or the woman can become an emotional aggressor and try to run everybody else, including the husband if she happens to be married. Now the Bible in the book of Proverbs emphasizes the second one, the emotional aggressor. She is called the contentious woman in Proverbs 27. So we need to back up just a little bit and look at 27:15. It says, "A constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike." Well, this word contentious should be translated a woman of judgments or oppression. I'll explain it in a minute. It's plural, and therefore we want to try and preserve the plural idea, but I don't like to say a woman of oppressions. However, every expression of contention, using that term, is an oppression. And the woman who is an aggressor in emotional revolt is an oppressor. The word is M-A-D, long O-N, pronounced madon. It comes from the verb D-I-Y-N, deen, which means to judge or to mete out punishment. Thus, the noun form that comes from this, and many times the Hebrew forms a noun by throwing an M sound at the beginning of the verb. See, the verb is deen, and the M sound in front of it forms a noun. Madon, therefore, means judgment directed toward someone else. It's in the plural, by the way, so it is judgments expressed toward someone else. They have translated it like an adjective, a contentious woman. It should be a woman of something. Thus, what are these things? If she's meting out punishment, if she's expressing judgments toward you, then what you have is her own emotional, human viewpoint, perspective, expressed in speech and action. Now that's the contentious woman. She has an emotional viewpoint. She has a human viewpoint. That is her perspective on life. That's how she views life, how she deals with life, emotionally and with human viewpoint. If she is married to you, you're in the middle. And you're going to have the expression, you are going to feel, rather, experience the expression of her emotionalism and her human viewpoint. And when that happens, it is like the drip, drip, drip all day long of a leaky roof. When it's raining outside, and the roof is leaking, and here comes the drip, 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 drip all day long, and just constant and constant and constant. In other words, there is no end to her oppression. There is no silencing her. There is no getting away from the subjective attacks that come from her character. And whenever you're dealing with emotionalism, whenever you're dealing with human viewpoint, you are dealing with subjectivity. No ability to properly evaluate. Remember the phrase we looked at back in point number one, the woman of discretion, ta'am, in Proverbs 11:22. The woman of discretion has the capacity to evaluate and make wise decisions because she's using wisdom as her perspective. The contentious woman doesn't have wisdom as her perspective. Instead, she has emotionalism and human viewpoint. And therefore, she's going to be oppressing. She's going to be subjective. She doesn't have any objectivity. She cannot look at life in an objective way. She will always be making the wrong decision, reacting. Reacting instead of dealing with, instead of handling. See, there's a difference. You handle your problems. You do not react to them. You deal with them. You control them. A situation comes about, you stay on top of it. You control it. You do not let it control you. I don't care how devastating it is. I don't care if it's a loss of a loved one. I don't care if it's a loss of a house. I don't care if it's an earthquake. I don't care if it's a tornado. I don't care if it's a car accident. I don't care if it's an illness. You stay on top of it. You do not let it destroy you. First of all, you do not let it control you and destroy you. You don't let it take away your capacity for life. You are alive. You're still living. You still have your arms and legs, supposedly, and yet if it's a health crisis, maybe you don't have your arms and legs. Maybe it is an attack on you. Maybe it is because of your situation. Maybe you are in Operation Job, where you have no physical capacity left. He still had his arms and legs, but he was basically neutralized because the skin cancer was all over his entire body. Even then, you still have life and you still have your soul. And as long as your soul is still functional, God has a plan for you on this earth. And if you can realize that and accept it, then you can control the situation. You can control the circumstance. And not only have a fantastic testimony, but have a fantastic inner peace and relaxation. Even in the midst of the most gruesome, imaginable crisis, no matter what it is, do not let it control you. Now, this takes some growth. This takes, really, knowledge of facts, knowledge of truth, knowledge of God's plan, knowledge of God's character, so that when something happens, you will be in control. But a woman who operates on her emotions does not have the capacity to be in control. She is always going to react and let the circumstance dictate to her. And as a result, she's going to have bitterness and anger and frustration. And this will result in not only looking at the world with contention, with human viewpoint evaluations or judgments, but also looking at life in general, looking at people, looking at circumstances, looking at loved ones, looking at husband, looking at children. And you wonder how comes, you wonder possibly how some children turn out the way they do. And it seems to be getting worse and worse in our society today, how these kids do what they do. Well, it's the fault of the women who are in emotional revolt, and it's the fault of the men who are not truly men. Men who are jocks. Men who they think they're something physically instead of concentrating on their character. They have no integrity. Well, we're not really talking about the men right now. We're talking about the women. And I don't like to talk against women, because women are the most beautiful thing that ever came from the hand of God, other than angels. That's why, of course, we call women angels sometimes. However, from the human perspective, since none of us have ever really seen an angel in its true essence, and no one in the ancient world, for that matter, has ever seen an angel in its true essence, the closest, the greatest picture of beauty to a man is a woman. Now, what a woman's perspective is, I don't know, but I don't think they really look at men as beautiful. Maybe they're going to have to go back to nature and say the most beautiful thing that came from God's hand is a waterfall, or a sunset, or a rose. At any rate, most men, 99%, and of course, based on our society changing, that's probably going to go down a little bit more, but most men think that there is a considerable amount of beauty in a woman. And not only physically, but as a woman's soul properly functions, there is great beauty there. So I don't like to speak about the negative aspects of a woman, but it must be done. We must recognize that there is a woman out there who is an emotional cripple or an emotional dictator. And she must be avoided at all costs. You must avoid her. You must not make the mistake of thinking that her beauty is more valuable than pearl. When Proverbs 31:10 says that a woman of Kayil is more valuable than pearl, don't think that the physical beauty is more important, that has the greater value, because you will marry a body and live the rest of your life with a dead soul. And Proverbs gives us some information about living with this woman who is in emotional revolt. So, A, Proverbs 21:9. It is better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a woman of Madon, the woman of judgments, the woman of oppression. Let her have the house. Where's the attic? Move the insulation over. I'm going to find a little corner in that attic and I'm going to stay there. I'll bring my food home from McDonald's or something. Don't even want to be in the kitchen at dinner time. Why? Because it is better, more advantageous, more beneficial, more comfortable, more fulfilling. Now notice, the issue here is not to leave. The issue here is you're stuck. You're just going to have to find a corner of the house the furthest away from her as you possibly can. The idea is hiding, by the way, because if she knows where you are, she'll be there with her madone. Than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Once again, the woman of Madon. Look at 25:24. You have the same idea. Repeated two times. Not only that, it's repeated three times, and it adds something a little bit later. 25:24, it is better to live in a corner of the roof than in a house shared with a woman of Madon. Same thing. Why the repetition? Because it's very important. David made mistakes with women. His son made greater mistakes than David did. Solomon was a collector of bodies. He was taught differently. He was taught that there was true value in a woman's soul. But he got preoccupied with a woman's body, and so he collected them, married them. Anything in a skirt, bring her home to the harem. 700 wives, 300 mistresses. He wasn't making up his mind, I guess, whether to make these part of the official harem or not. that is, for the wifely harem. I guess you have to have the harem for the mistresses and the harem for the wives. 700 on the one hand, 300 on the other. 1,000. And I tell you what, any one of those 1,000 would cause our head to turn. He picked the cream of the crop. He picked the most beautiful women that were in existence at that time because he had this preoccupation with the woman's body. Shouldn't be strange to us. We're all men here. That's the man's downfall. What is the woman's problem? Emotions. What is the man's primary problem? Primary problem and general problem is a preoccupation with the physical body of a woman. Now, some men can control it. Some men have an area of strength in that area. But basically, when you get right down to it, that's going to be the man's downfall. Primarily. Other things? Sure. Okay. However, that's one of the reasons for the repetition. Because Solomon was well aware of his 1,000 women in emotional revolt, oppressing him. Yes, even in those days, these women would be in emotional, would operate on emotional oppression or emotional weakness. Either one, but they were emotional cripples one way or the other. And he had to live with them. He found no woman of character. Hold your place and turn to the book of Ecclesiastes for a moment. Chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes. Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. He says at verse 27, "Behold, I have discovered this, says the preacher." That's the name he claimed for himself, because when he started writing the book of Ecclesiastes, he had recovered from his insanities and was promoting truth. "Adding one thing to another to find an explanation, which I am still seeking but have not found, I have found one man, one friend, one man among 1,000, but I have not found a woman among all these." Now it's interesting that he says one man among 1,000. And then he's not found a woman among all these. Why? Well, when we have a biblical record of 700 plus 300 makes 1,000. Here he says he's not found a woman among 1,000. Here's a man who collected them, but he collected them for their beauty. And he did not collect a woman of integrity. And he says, "I have not found a woman among all these." Now, these are the women he had. He did encounter a woman of integrity. He met one day a woman of integrity. And he tried to woo her. When that failed, he kidnapped her and took her home to his harem. This woman of integrity was in love and engaged to another man, a lowly shepherd. And Solomon kept her confined in the harem with all these other emotional cripples, these silly wickets. And she was around all these women, and all she could talk about was her integrity and her love for this other man. Finally, the only way she got out was to escape. She ran away. And they all yelled to her, "Come back, come back." But she got away, rendezvoused with her fiancé, and escaped Solomon's advances. That's the one that got away. Why? Because a woman of integrity will see through a jerk. Solomon was a jerk. And this woman, think about it. The king of the greatest empire of that day. Judah. And this woman didn't want anything to do with him. She wasn't wealthy. Her family had a little vineyard. That was about it. So that's a testimony concerning Solomon. By the way, you want that story. That's the Song of Solomon. Right after Ecclesiastes. It tells you the whole story. Of course, you're going to need to be taught it because it's very obscure in the English. At any rate, so if Solomon is writing in the book of Proverbs, Solomon the preacher, the promoter of truth, is now writing in the book of Proverbs information that should guide us to the right woman, since he never found one among 1,000. Every time he looked at their beauty, he saw an empty soul. A beautiful woman, but an empty soul. He saw a pig with a ring of gold in its nose, just as we saw in Proverbs 11. Okay, letter B under 5. Proverbs 21:19. It is better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. This is Operation Separation. Now, this is don't get married to the emotional cripple. Don't get attached to a woman who has no integrity. It's the same word, contentious, but another word is added, which we'll have to look at. But this is saying it's better to live alone than with a woman who is contentious and vexing. In other words, don't get hooked up with one of these types. If you can find a woman of integrity, which he says in chapter 31, who can find? Looks like you're stuck. Well, it's not saying that they're not out there, because indeed they are. The word, we've already seen the word contentious there, a contentious woman. We have now the word vexing. That's the word, K-A-A-S, kaas. And that word means frustrating, or it's as a noun, it's a woman of kaas, okay, so it's frustration and bitterness. You have two ideas associated with this word kaas. Let's put this under A, let's see, what do we have? 1 and 2, okay, we're under B, aren't we? 1 and 2. Vexation is the one idea. What is vexation? Vexation is frustration. Frustration and bitterness. See, vexation means you're constantly miserable in your soul. You're constantly being attacked in your soul. Constantly unrest. It is constantly piercing you, constantly pricking you and vexing you. Thus, frustration and bitterness. See, frustration means there's no fulfillment in life, no satisfaction. Something's always there to prick you. Something's always there to take away any beauty in life. So this woman has an attitude. She's frustrated. She's bitter. Thus, the other aspect of kaas is anger. And that is the expression of it overtly, as well as inside. So you're inside, you're frustrated, you're bitter, you're angry. And you're going to express this on the outside. But frustration is not expressed on the outside, except in anger. Except in judgments. See? The emotionalism, the human viewpoint. All she's doing is expressing the emptiness of her own soul. Because she has no integrity. She has no grace. She has no capacity to evaluate things with divine standards. She has no wisdom. She has no kayil. She has none of these things. She has an empty soul. And an empty soul that expresses itself overtly is simply going to be something to avoid, something to get away from. Who wants to be around an empty soul? Who wants to be around something that has nothing to offer, nothing to give? And people marry this way, thinking, oh, we love each other. But they're in love with love, and they're in love with sex. And they figure that sex is going to tide them over for the rest of their life. And so this guy wakes up in the morning after a rip-roaring... So how do you think he feels? He's had his night with the most beautiful creature on earth. He's occupied himself with a physical venture, and now sitting across the breakfast table in the morning, he sees an empty soul. He tries to converse. He tries to speak intelligently. Out comes Madon. Out comes Kaas. Out comes contention and vexation. Out comes her own frustration. Out comes her own bitterness. Out comes her empty-headedness. Now, you may not find it that way immediately. It takes a little while for the physical high to be lowered a little bit. and you come back to Earth and you realize that there's more to life than sex. You realize that you'd like to be able to talk to somebody from time to time. But it's too late then. So the warning to avoid such an individual is this. All right, so we have an added word there. We have the vexing idea. All right, point C. Back to Proverbs 12:4, but this time the second half of the verse. It says, an excellent wife, actually a wife of integrity, is the glory or the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is as cancer in his bones. She who shames him. Now, what does it then mean to shame? Well, it means she has no integrity. She does not have kayil. Instead, she is going to have her oppressiveness. And see, oppressiveness in a woman is not going to be limited just to the home. It's going to be wherever she goes. She's going to express this emotional oppressiveness to her quote-unquote friends. Maybe we just better say acquaintances. She doesn't have any true friends, unless it's another one of the same caliber. And when the chips are down, they're both going to be against each other. Within society, she's going to be emotionally oppressive to everyone she encounters. The groceryman, the postman, the beautician. If she has a job, she's going to be oppressive to her fellow employees, to her employer, to her those subordinate to her. She's going to be emotionally oppressive even to those in authority over her. A lot of false charges are filed because of emotionally oppressive women. I'm not denying that there may be cause for some of these sexual harassment cases, but most of the time it's a woman who is simply oppressing those over her. And the accusations are totally unfounded. But it's another subject. 12:4 then says, she who shames him. This is the woman who operates in rebellion. She speaks and acts overtly contrary to his authority, contrary to his position of rulership in the home. And this shames him. This is as a cancer in his bones. What's that mean? Well, it's translated rottenness. That means they're going to keep on eating away, eating away, eating away. It's going to destroy any relationship they might have had. It's going to destroy any potential for making a relationship. It's going to destroy his ability to have any fulfillment in life. It's going to continually attack him. Now, if he does have integrity by some chance, maybe he got it after the marriage. It's rare for a man of integrity to get hooked up with a woman like this unless he acquired his integrity after the marriage or ignored his integrity on a one-night stand or something, ended up getting married as a result. At any rate, it's going to be a constant plague upon him with regard to his own fulfillment in life. It's going to continue to rot away his own capacity to enjoy life, because every time he turns around, every time he comes home, every time he tries to eat something, he's going to see this empty soul there. And he has to live with it, or live in the attic. Because he doesn't really have the option, or shouldn't have the option, of going to the desert place. Since if he is a man of integrity, then he's going to stay. He's going to abide by his obligation, marriage. If he's not a man of integrity, then there's really no issue anyway. He can do what he wants to do. But the point is, he's not going to have any fulfillment in that situation. All right, point D. Proverbs 14:1, second half. We looked at the first half. 14:1, the wise woman builds her house. Okay, this is the woman of wisdom. But the foolish tears it down with her own hands. Now, this doesn't mean literally, but it means that she is the one responsible for destroying any relationship, any potential for fulfillment in life. Why? Because of her own foolishness. And foolishness speaks of a moronish type attitude. An attitude that lacks discretion, that lacks insight, that lacks wisdom, all these other factors that we've looked at, that lacks integrity. The word foolish is the same word we've seen many times throughout the book of Proverbs. It just simply communicates the idea of a failure to relate to divine viewpoint. And notice what she does. Operation self-destruct. She's going to destroy herself. She's going to destroy her house, her family, her relationship. Now, sounds like I'm picking on the woman, but by all means, I'm not. And men are just as responsible for a breakdown of a relationship many times. The man and the woman is to be held ultimately responsible. Together, they build or they break. But it is the individual character in each one that must be considered as contributing to either the building up or the breaking down of the house, of the relationship. This will make a little more sense to you when we finally get to the woman in Proverbs 31. All right, letter E. Proverbs 27:16. We were at 27:15. I don't know if anyone possibly looked ahead just a little bit. But the subject continues at that point. I just didn't want to cover it at that moment. 27:15 says, "A constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. He who would restrain her restrains the wind." Can you restrain the wind? Now, he who would restrain her, he who said, "Oh, I'm going to control this," pardon the expression, I won't say it. My man Rush says, when he wants to use the term, he says, "B.I. itch." You want to control this woman? Try controlling the wind. You want to take a hold of her and restrain her? Grab a hold of a bunch of oil and control the oil, you know? Keep the oil in your hand. Can't be done. You find yourself stuck, or you find yourself in a potential thinking, "Oh, I know she's got her problems, but I ain't gonna pass that figure by. I can handle it. I can control her. I can mold her. I can change her." And I usually hear that from the other angle. The woman says, "I can change him." And the man will promise anything. "Oh, yes, I'll go to church." And his mind says, "Oh, just to get married, and I won't step foot in it again." And that's usually what happens. But the man also will have this ideal in his mind that he can change a woman if there happens to be these major flaws. And we're talking about the major flaws. We're not talking about little things. There are little things that can be changed on both sides. Both a man and a woman need character building, need additions with regard to their moral perspective, with regard to their intellectual perspective, their academic perspective, all of these things. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a man who encounters a beautiful woman who has no discretion, a beautiful woman who has no wisdom, a beautiful woman who has no integrity, a beautiful woman who has no grace, and instead a beautiful woman who is contentious and vexed. And he says, "I will control her." Solomon says, "Right. Control the wind. Hold that oil in your hand." Can't do it. Don't think you can. There's only one person who can. God. Through regeneration and character growth. Both. Not just regeneration. Don't think salvation's going to do it. Salvation plus growth. Don't think, "Oh, after we're married for a little while, she'll come around. She'll believe in Christ." What's our application to us today? Well, first of all, don't marry an unbeliever. Secondly, if it's a believer, which it should be, make certain that the soul is grounded in Bible truth. Thus, a great potential for integrity. Whether there are flaws there or not, if the soul is grounded on Bible truth, if the woman is really hungry and searching for truth, then you've got a great foundation to build on. I don't expect you to wait for a woman who's absolutely, perfectly, spiritually mature. Most of us don't get married when we are spiritually mature. It's the ideal. But the ideal is never intended to be literally followed in the Bible. If you study it, in many of the passages, you will discover that the ideal is never really intended to be a mandate, just a principle that, you know, would be nice to follow. So use this insight. We've analyzed a little bit about the woman. Don't think that you can change a woman who has an empty soul. Don't think that you can put something in the soul. You can't. And all the enjoyment of her body will not make up for the empty soul. So, what about the woman of integrity? Main point 6. Proverbs 31, 10 through 31. Very beautiful passage that I would like to spend hours on. I've promised to do it several times. Never have. I'm not going to do it now. We're going to look it over and make a few comments on it, just to note what's there. A wife of integrity who can find for her value is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her. So first of all, the attitude of the husband is in view. He's totally relaxed. I mentioned that earlier. She has character. She has integrity. He doesn't have to be worrying. Oh no. Wife's out with the car. I left the wife at home and the plumber's on his way over. He can relax. He knows the wife has the capacity to make the right decision. The wife should be encouraged to make these kind of decisions. Should be encouraged to take a little initiative. Today, a woman who's been out on her own before marriage usually has a certain capacity to, you know, handle these things. Doesn't mean that you as a man should just slough it off. You know, that, well, I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. If it's going to get done, you're going to do it. Otherwise, it's not going to get done. That's not the right attitude either. But the heart of her husband trusts in her, has confidence, and he will have no lack of gain. The emphasis on gain is material benefit, as the passage will develop. Because, see, if he allows her to do her own thing, quote unquote, she's going to bring profit into the home, into the partnership, into the house. Instead of tearing the house down, she's going to build the house up. Remember Proverbs 14:1. Verse 12, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. See, a woman of integrity realizes that her primary responsibility on this earth, other than spiritual pursuit, is the promotion of her husband's character. Or reputation, rather. Her response is to the husband. Her place is at his side as his helpmeet, as his partner. Therefore, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Verse 13, some business pursuits. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight, which refers to her mental relaxation and mental contentment. No bitterness, no frustration. No, oh, I wish I were. Or I wish I had. No daydreams that deny her reality. It doesn't mean she can't think, I wonder what it would be like if. But I'm talking about a daydream that denies her reality. This is the word delight. Delight means she's happy to do it. She's relaxed in what she does. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. That means she searches for the best deal. She is diligent to use money well. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maiden servants. In other words, she takes care. She administrates. She manages the household. She's up early to do this. She considers a field and buys it. All right, here is an independent business venture. She checks out this field and says, well, you know, I've got enough money to buy this field. I can turn this into something good. So she buys the field. She's been making money on various other things. brought out a little bit later, with her earnings, or from her earnings, she plants a vineyard. So she did something with the field. She plants a vineyard and makes more money. She girds herself with strength and makes her soul, makes her arms strong. The word her soul, herself, in verse 17, refers to her physical. It says her loins. She girds her loins with strength and makes her arms strong. Refers to her general body strength. She keeps herself fit. She keeps herself well. She uses common sense. I think last time I was here, I contrasted that with soul and body, but looking more deeply into the Hebrew, instead of using what I was taught, you discover that it does not refer to soul and body. It's both referring to physical strength. Verse 18, she discerns that her gain, that is her production, is good. She makes an evaluation, saying, hey, I'm doing okay here. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. Her lamp does not go out at night. Stays up late, thinking, doing calculations, making decisions. Verse 19, she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She sews. In that economy, of course, making clothing was a big deal. She makes clothing. She extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. A very important aspect of integrity is generosity. One of the keys to discerning integrity is generosity. You see generosity in someone, that's a clue. Not necessarily all the time. In other words, just because you see generosity, don't think that that is a sign of integrity. Because there's a big human viewpoint push, human good push toward generosity, where you think you are actually pleasing God or making yourself better by being generous. This is a genuine generosity that you have to recognize to see as a part of integrity. Verse 21, she is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. In other words, she makes plans for adverse situations. And she's not concerned about adverse situations. She's not worried about the snow because she's planned for it. She's not worried about the earthquake because she's planned for it. She's not worried about the tornadoes because she's planned for it. How can you plan for something that wipes out a whole city? You can't. Except in your soul. And that's the key. See, she's not afraid. That's the key. Integrity has courage, has confidence, because it is based on absolute standards of truth. For all her household are clothed with scarlet. That emphasizes the physical preparation aspect. She makes coverings for herself. Now, verse 22 is a personal note. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. She keeps herself attractive to her husband. She doesn't run around in the rags. She makes herself, she keeps herself attractive. She doesn't use her hard work as an excuse for her unkempt appearance. Verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Why is he known in the gates? Because this woman is a crown to her husband. We saw it in other passages. Everyone knows her, and if they know her, they know her husband. Why? Because she is speaking the praises of her husband. She makes it very clear. She flashes that ring. See? The woman is a crown of her husband. She lets everybody know, I belong to somebody. Don't mess with me. His name is... Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen, further aspects of her financial pursuits. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. This is emphasizing her inner strength. Now, verse 17 was her physical strength. Verse 25 is her soul strength. There's the contrast. There's the two areas. Instead of splitting verse 17 in half, the soul strength is down in verse 25. Strength and dignity are her clothing. And she smiles at the future. Contentment. Confidence. Verse 26. It's not all business. It's not all physical. It's also promoting truth. She opens her mouth in wisdom. And the teaching of chesed. Grace provision. Or grace. The teaching of grace is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. In other words, she's diligent to make certain that her household has what they need. Now, what do her children think of such a woman as this? They rise up and they wish her happiness. The word blessed means to wish someone happiness. Also has the idea of praise. Her husband also rises up and he praises her. And there's the relationship between praise and bless. It's a poetic repetition. Children bless, husband praises. Both is the same idea. Wishing her well, praising, giving her recognition. Verse 29, he says, many daughters have done honorably, but you excel them all. And I tell you, whether it is true or not, whether she's the best there is of or not, in his eyes she is. Because she does him well and not evil all the days of her life. Back to verse 12. Verse 30, final comments. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. Now we have to be careful because the word charm is C-H-long-A-N, which is the word we saw back in Proverbs 11, 16, or was it 15? Where did we start? 16, which is translated grace or favor. Here it's translated charm. Here it is emphasizing the overt appearance of grace. The overt appearance of grace that may or may not be genuine. In other words, all by itself, it is deceptive. How does it come, or how does it, how is it that it is not deceptive when it carries the qualifications that are just described, that we've just seen? All these various things that are there. Now, how can you discern that prior to the fact, right? I mean, you don't marry her and see how she performs, how she wives, how she mothers. No, you have to converse with her. You have to have a soul communication with her. The key to any courtship is soul communication. Talking, 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 talking. And when you're talked out, you talk some more. And then you talk some more. And you make certain that there is a soul rapport before there is any body communication. And then, body communication must wait until you meet the standards of society. Marriage license. Marriage ceremony. If you were in the ancient world, you just take her home, show her your mother's room, introduce her, and say, all right, we're married. We're going off, starting our own home. Depending on the society, sometimes they had a big party, big ceremony. Other times it's just let's identify, let's get married, let's do it. And they were married. Society recognized it as such, and it was still just as binding. All right, so this word Cain is deceitful, so you have to be very discerning. And beauty refers to physical beauty, yophi, Y-O-P-H-I-Y, yophi, which is physical beauty, is vain, is emptiness. So what is it then that's going to make physical beauty and this idea of graciousness, or what we could say is moral integrity. Here's a good way to handle Cain, okay? Moral integrity. Moral integrity doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to have a good match. So you look at a woman and you say, she's beautiful, She has moral integrity, but Proverbs is written to what category of young men? Proverbs is written to what category of man? Believers. Exactly. So, moral integrity is not enough. Physical beauty is never enough. Moral integrity. Cain, moral integrity is deceitful. Why is it deceitful? Because you look at moral integrity and say, hey, she's right on. So what do you need besides moral integrity? But a woman who fears Jehovah, she shall be praised. This is the one. So you have three factors. Moral integrity, Cain, plus physical beauty, if you have that option. There's nothing wrong with that. Plus spiritual integrity, the woman who fears the Lord. Those three factors. Verse 31 is just the final praise from the mouth of Solomon to the woman of integrity. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. Give her the honor that is due her, is what he's saying. Honor women. Men have a tendency to abuse women throughout society, throughout all of history. Women have been abused. Solomon is saying right here, give her the product of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Give her what is due her. Give her the opportunity to show her stuff, as it were. And I don't mean physically. I mean to be herself and to let her integrity show forth. Okay, there you have it. A passage that could still go for quite a bit longer in its in-depth analysis. If you have a wife who meets those qualifications or is on the way of meeting those qualifications, you are in a good situation. If you're looking for a wife, you know what kind of things to talk about now, don't you? Well, to change the subject drastically, let's adjust our thinking to the promotion of the plan and character of God by celebration. The communion service, I don't think we've even set up. Nope, I just slipped up on my duties there. Don't need this on anymore.